Hello, everyone. I'm Alicia Swamy. I'm here with my co-hosts, Eric Johnson, Keely Severson. We are Exposing Mold. We have Nicole Tomazek-Spanger with us today. She was diagnosed with ME/CFS, but she actually overcame it with mold avoidance. And she's here joining us today to talk about her success story and what happened through her journey. Thank you so much for joining us today, Nicole.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Now let's get into the nitty gritty. Like, let's learn more about you and your life and what happened before ME/CFS, who you were before and then after, and then how you found Eric to embark on mold avoidance.
Yeah, sure. So I live in Melbourne, Australia, and up until sort of 5 or more, maybe 7 years ago, I was perfectly healthy, very active, having a good life. There had been times during my life, looking back, that things maybe make a bit more sense. But up until then, I hadn't sort of really put anything into perspective. And then I became extremely unwell. I ended up in a room for over 12 months, sensitive to light, sensitive to noise, unable to look after my children. I lost my balance and my vision. I wasn't able to care for myself anymore. It reached the point where we had 3 doctors write to the government to actually ask for them to supply a carer for my children because I was so disabled. And my husband was trying to support the family and trying to look after me. He ended up having to walk away from his business because he just couldn't do it all. It was a time of sort of immense suffering. The only time that I left the house was in my wheelchair to go to the neurologist. And even then, that was a huge, massive struggle. And we really didn't know what to do. It was, very, very difficult time.
So sorry to hear that.
Thank you.
The story is very similar to a lot of people who deal with this illness. And you're running around trying to figure out what's going on with you, you know, and then you get a diagnosis and they still don't know what to do for you. And it's like, all right, what do I do next? So I'm sure that you had the run around with doctors, because we all do. And what made you go rogue and search the internet for more answers?
Look, I had seen a number of doctors and they had all said that my blood tests were completely normal and there was nothing wrong with me and that it must be in my head and, you know, maybe I should see a psychiatrist and, you know, all this sort of thing. I'd had a number of MRIs and I was actually pregnant at the time as well with my third child. Which sort of just added an extra layer of difficulty. And we had moved into a house that we had tested and sort of thought that it was okay. And the only reason that I thought about mold is because my mother was bedbound for 20 years. She was literally in her bed, completely disabled, also unable to walk or, you know, no balance, struggling to speak, you know, just completely helpless, being looked after by carers. And so I sat by her bedside for 20 years, basically, and watched her deteriorate. Yeah, it was just horrendous. and so I had done a lot of reading and a lot of research about Lyme disease and mold, and you know, as a daughter, I was desperate to help my mother, and I had seen the runaround that she had received from doctors. And so every night I would sit there and read and research and, you know, just try and help her. So when this happened to me, I actually had a fair bit of knowledge as a result of her situation. And at that point, my eyes didn't work properly. I couldn't even trace a line, like a straight line on the wall. Like, that was too much for me. You know, I just had to be in my sort of silent bubble, you know, completely anything would sort of trigger me. So I think I was able to maybe kind of read something or, you know, actually, no, I couldn't at that point. Yeah, it was a real struggle, but I managed to look at Facebook, I think, for like a few minutes a day. And that was it. You know, the rest of the time I just had to be doing nothing. I was taking Ativan. I was completely, you know, just not able to do anything. And I think I came across something about Eric and about avoidance. And I sort of looked at it. And at that point I was just, you know, getting no help from anywhere else. And I thought about it. I lay in my bed and I thought about it. And I thought, this makes complete and total sense to me. And I said to my husband, you know, if I stay here, I'm going to die. Like, we have to do something. I had seen what had happened to my mother, and I knew that if I continued on in that situation, I would be in the same situation as her, basically. So, look, he sort of took a while to get his head around it, but we decided to go and do a sabbatical. So we got, it was very difficult for me even just to leave my room. You know, it was massive. But I just knew that, like, I had to survive for my children, you know. Oh, it was it was horrendous. Yeah, and so we went somewhere for 2 weeks, and I actually started to feel a little bit better. We went somewhere sunny, and we didn't really bring much with us. And we had one occasion. By that point, I had started to have MCAS reactions, so I was very limited to what I could eat. If I touched certain things or ate certain things, I'd end up with these horrendous sort of reactions. At the time, I didn't realize it was MCAS. And I remember being on holiday on this sabbatical and sort of taking something and then suddenly going from not being able to see to not being able to see. But during this sabbatical, I was actually even able to get into the pool with my children and actually move around in the water, which was massive because I'd literally come from being in a room for a year. And I thought, well, that's something, you know. And then we got back to our house, and within, I think, about 3 or 4 hours of returning back to the house, I had a horrendous reaction. I became hysterical. I felt like someone had poured acid on my body. You know, I was started to scream and cry, and it was just so, so awful. And I had seen that this was a potential thing that could happen. So I knew to some degree what was going on. And I think it was a week after that we literally just walked away from everything that we owned. We walked away from our house. We took nothing. We went somewhere and had a shower. We bought some fresh clothes from, you know, just a cheap local place. And, yeah, went somewhere else. We had blow-up mattresses. We slept on the floor. We didn't own anything. My kids had to leave all their toys. You know, we just didn't take anything with us, and we just started from fresh. Yeah. So it was, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I'm just, for you to tell your story without coming to tears, because I want to cry for you. I mean, Eric says it all the time. Like, was that a bad dream? You know, like, did that just happen to me and my family? I'm still wrapping my head around the fact that you were pregnant.
Yeah.
You were dealing with this. Like, maybe you can talk a little bit more about how that was. Mm-hmm. So were you on sabbatical and you were pregnant?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
So I had a two and a half year old and a 4 year old, and I was pregnant.
You are a strong woman. You know that?
Thank you.
So when you gave birth, were you guys already out of the house, started fresh and start over?
Sorry, I'm just trying to remember exactly. I was still very sick at that point. It's so funny. You, it's so traumatic that you block things out just to survive, you know? But I do remember having to give birth and being hypersensitive to fragrance and having to make sure that all the that no nurses who were wearing fragrance came near me. And I was still at that point, my face was kind of paralyzed. I couldn't make expressions with my face. Like smiling was like an effort. And the left side of my body had gone numb during this whole experience. You know, I had a dragging left leg and all this sort of thing. And so, yeah, I had to give birth in this state, which was extremely difficult. I was still very, very unwell, and I couldn't actually lift my baby to breastfeed her. I couldn't walk at that stage when she was born. Yeah. Oh, it was so bad.
Yeah. And so your husband then, I'm assuming, took on that responsibility to.
Yeah, we had a government. Yeah, I'm remembering now. We were still in the Maldi house. Yeah. And we had a government carer who would come every day and hold the baby and bring the baby. I was breastfeeding, bring the baby to me to be breastfed. And I was still unwell at that point, and I had to go back into the hospital in the city, and my husband would have to drive 2 hours a day to go and get the milk from the hospital to bring it home to give to the baby.
Wow.
It was just awful. Wow. And they were, while I was in the hospital separated from my baby, I asked the hospital if I could bring my baby to be with me so I could breastfeed her, and they said no.
Why did they decline?
They said it wasn't their policy. And in the meantime, all they did was send a psychiatrist in to my hospital room to come and talk to me that that was the only treatment. And then they sent a physiotherapist in because I couldn't walk at that stage. And they gave me one of those walkers, you know, to try and move. And then they sort of wanted to transfer me to a walking stick, but I didn't have the balance. Yeah.
So their main treatment of you was to bring a psychiatrist in.
Yeah. And then I called my husband and I said to him, I need to get out of here. I said, if I stay here, they'll probably lock me up. Like, I need to come home and be with my child. And this is, and so he came and arrived at the hospital and said, I'm discharging my wife. And the psychiatrist and the doctor came and they said, oh, no, you can't do that. And he said, yes, we can. And we got up and we left the hospital against their wishes, with them trying to keep me there.
Wow.
Got in the car, went back to the Maldi house.
Did they try to do anything thereafter? Because I feel like in the US, it would be like CPS, you know, Child Protective Services would have been called. It would have been a whole ordeal. Well, did they try to do something like that to you?
Yeah. So the CAT team came to the house. I don't know if that's what they call it in America, but my husband threw them out. And that was it basically. And it was soon after that that we walked away from the house and just took our newborn and our two small children and went to a house with nothing, basically.
Well, bravo to your husband for sticking it through, because we do know that a lot of relationships don't make it through this because they believe the psychiatrists. They think that, maybe there's something wrong mentally with my wife or whatever, but he was there for you.
It wasn't smooth sailing, I've got to admit. You know, we had a year of a lot of tension where there were times that he didn't believe me, and we had to walk through that. And it sort of reached a point where I said to him, I can't fight you and the illness. I need as much strength as I can to fight the illness. And so we're going to have to get a divorce because I can't do both. And I need to survive and I need to be there for my kids. So in the end, I think he finally, I don't know whether it was that or what it was, but certainly we had a year of him not really believing me. And then he finally came around when he realized that I was going to leave with the children, basically. And from then on, he's been extremely supportive. But certainly I know what it's like to not be believed. Mm.
I think we all go through that. I don't think I've heard one story of a couple like of a husband or whatever, fully believing right away. You know, I think I've heard a few, but it's like, I've gone through that. Keely's gone through that. And it's like, you get to a point where it's like, you either believe me or you don't. And I'm out of here because I'm going to die and I need to save my life. I totally get that sensation, that feeling, that whole situation. I went through that with my own husband. I mean, there's been times where we've fought with each other and I said, look, I have to survive this and you're impeding in my health because you're not willing to bend over backwards for my health needs. And this is what I need right now. Yeah. So and if you're not going to comply, I'm out, you know?
Yeah. And I asked him on multiple occasions to read the book about mold avoidance and he wouldn't read it. And when we got to our new house, it was a double story. So the upstairs was my clean zone and I put a baby gates and no one could go in there unless they had showered and done all the right things. And we had some occasions where he'd sort of gone up in his work clothes and sat on the bed and, you know, just basically interfered with my clean zone, which was the only thing keeping me alive. And he didn't quite understand how important that was to me. And so that was a struggle. You know, I put big signs up, no one up here. And, you know, I was so fastidious with it. I remember one time we even had to go to the hospital. My daughter wasn't well or something. And it was 3 a.m. He'd taken her, she'd had a cough or something. And I said, you can't bring her up here. She has to have a shower. You know, I just knew that unless I followed this 100% of the letter, that I may not survive. So I did everything and I did it. I remember once we had to change our washing machine and our dryer 3 times because something that was contaminated went in there. So I was obsessive when it came to this. I was not going to take any chances with my survival.
Oh, this is so reminiscent of the tent scene in Jennifer Breed's documentary, Unrest. I mean, it just nails it. And she talks about how Omar, her husband, walked out of the moldy house and she was trying to prevent him from getting close to her tent. And they got into a fight right there in the documentary, right on camera, and lays it all out. That's exactly how it is.
Eric is in my head. I was thinking of that too. Like, this is like flashbacks of Jen Brea's Unrest, you know, the popular MECFS documentary of how it's like, don't touch my tent. You know, we look hysterical, but like, this is what we need for our health. I mean, this is how serious it is. And you won't know until you're dealing with it yourself. You know,
I mean, we would drive into the garage. Everyone in the family would get undressed. The clothes we'd worn out would be left on the floor in the garage. We would enter the house naked. We would use the downstairs shower, change into our clothes. You know, everything had a very particular process. And because my husband hadn't read the book and he just wasn't on board, there were going to be issues.
Well, just for future reference, when doctors claim that they know all about this, they always did, it's notable that no ME/CFS doctor, researcher, no mold doctor or researcher responded to Jennifer Brea's movie. None.
Even despite our Center for Disease Control, which is like a major organization in the US, they didn't even do anything about it. And so I'm just curious, like, because you live in Australia, I mean, you know what's happening in the US here. Nothing is happening, really. They're trying to ignore it. The ME/CFS still is unknown. We don't know what it is, even though mold is connected to it. What's going on in Australia these days? Are people getting care or is mold being acknowledged? You can speak more to that.
No, look, there's the occasional article in the newspaper that will say, you know, moldy house or something like that. But certainly when it comes to ME/CFS, there's no acknowledgement, no recognition of it. You know, there's, I think, a one line on the major sort of charity here, which is it may be as a result of environmental factors, but that's as far as it goes. No doctor will acknowledge it here. Even when I wrote that article recently about Erica sent it to over 100 publications in Australia, there was no interest. It's just not seen as, and even, you know, I lost a lot of friends. I lost the majority of my friends through my illness as well, because most people just say, oh, well, mold's been around forever. And, you know, there's no way that this was mold. You know, family members, friends, all that sort of thing, I lost during the process because of their inability to recognize it for what it is. And the fact is, I'm now completely recovered. I live a completely normal life. I go to work 4 days a week. I couldn't drive for many years. I drive on the highway now. I couldn't cross a road by myself because I couldn't work out where I was in space. I had to sit on a disabled shower chair to get showered. I now swim laps. You know, I am completely recovered as a result of this.
I wish my husband can hear everything that you're saying right now. I'm on earphones because he's making a lot of noise, but because he feels like we're going to be stuck in this forever. And it's like the hardest thing. Yeah.
It is. I know. It is. It is.
It's so nice to hear someone say that they've recovered their life, you know?
Yeah.
I just appreciate that so much. And I'm so happy that you found Eric and that you,
I know,
you're around for your children and you're, you know, you get to have a relationship with your husband again and you get to live life. And, you know, Keely and I are not 100%. And we strive for that every day. And we do all these maddening things, you know, of what you described to try to get well. And it's so nice that you stuck it out and that you recovered
your life. Look, it took 5 to 7 years, but it eventually happened for me. I don't know how long you guys have been in this situation, but...
I love that. Thank you so much. Sorry for getting all...
Yes, no. I'm
crying, but...
Yeah, look... I know the hellhole because I've seen it, you know, and I've lived it and I've sat by my mother's bedside for 20 years. So I know the suffering that goes on, you know, and it is a miracle. You know, I remember there being Mother's Day things that happened at school. I couldn't go. My husband would have to go on behalf of me, you know, all of these things that you miss out on because you can't. Do it. And now when I, you know, go, it's like I couldn't go into shopping centers because the bright lights, you know, I used to have to wear dark glasses. And when we walked, I used to have to lean on my husband. I could only walk for a few steps and then I'd have to sit down. And, you know, it's a miracle for me to be back in life is incredible. And had I believed the doctors and had I just followed you know, the Western medical system and done as I was told, I'm sure that I wouldn't be doing this now.
Now that you have this amazing recovery and you've done all that you've done to obtain this recovery, I'm sure that you've been reaching out to research organizations and doctors to like let them know. Which organizations have you reached out to and what were their responses?
I'm just trying to remember the one in Australia. Just having a quick look online, the big one, Emerge Australia. Yeah, so I did contact them and I did request a meeting with their CEO. I called about 3 times, but there wasn't any interest there. She didn't want to meet with me. I spoke to their PR person a number of times, but, you know, the interest in mold wasn't there. I did reach out and speak to one of the head CFS researchers in Australia who's received a huge, you know, multi-million dollar deal to look into CFS. I spoke to him. He wasn't aware of the history at all. We spoke about it and he said he was interested and grateful to learn about it, but he, you know, they're just a general lab. So, you know, and I've sort of reached out to a number of people who are unwell and offered to help them. Some people have been very keen and happy to receive this information. Other people have not. And I guess when you're unwell, it's almost like it it becomes a parasite. It takes over your body. It wants to live. And so any information coming in that will destroy it, it doesn't want to listen to. And so I understand where that's coming from. And the other thing is I'm quite, I'd say, maybe militant when it comes to this approach. Like I said, I do everything to the 100th degree. There's no room for not doing it properly, because if you don't do it properly, you're only going to fail. And potentially some people think that I'm a little bit too extreme in my approach. But that is the reason that I recovered, is because there were no half jobs when it came to this. It was 100% or nothing. And I lived this and breathed this until I was better.
Amazing. Did you ever reach out to any U.S. organizations like OMF or Open Medicine Foundation or SolveME? They're the big ones out here.
No, yeah. I didn't. No.
Okay. Because we're trying to get through to them, and they still. Eric, what I think one doctor actually made the recommendation recently to a patient to avoid mold. And so we're like, well, that's a good step in the right direction. But I don't really know what they're doing publicly with it.
They're doing nothing publicly. They secretly know about this, and they will tell individual patients on a one-on-one basis, but they don't want to tell the general public and make this phenomenon well known.
Yeah, look, I mean, I find just in general, people believe what they're told, and they just follow the given line of the government or whatever it is, and it's just too difficult for them to think outside that box.
I do appreciate you writing that article in Eric's story, Casualties of Omission. That was really beautifully written. It's a shocker that no one is really interested in wanting to learn more about the history. You know, like, what is this massive cover-up underway about? Like, are they worried because there's too many sick people in Australia with ME/CFS, the US? It's like, why can't we get the move on and recognize that mold is a factor, and that maybe some people might have to go to the extremes that we have to recover our health?
Yeah, I mean, as Eric says, you know, the doctors are taught in a certain way, and, you know, they have their specialties. You'll go to a neurologist, or you'll go to a, you know, endocrinologist or whatever it is, and they have memorized everything from the books, you know, rote memorization. Like a computer that just spits out the information. And if the information isn't in there, it's not going to come out, basically. And this idea of going to live in a tent outside, people are taught that they can just pop a pill and it's going to fix them. And unfortunately, we wish it was that simple, but that's not the way it is.
Absolutely. Since you were pregnant with your child having ME/CFS, do you notice any issues within that child or in your other children or your husband having some sort of like sensitivity to mold?
No. Well, look, it was interesting because when we were living in this moldy house, my 3-year-old developed severe asthma, and my husband on a number of occasions when we were living in that house had to rush her to emergency in the middle of the night because she couldn't breathe. She ended up, you know, having to stay in hospital. This just went on and on and on the whole year. You know, there were times where she just stopped breathing altogether. And my other daughter, the 5-year-old, developed huge lumps on her neck while we were living in the house. And the doctors, the GP, the general practitioner, thought that it may be cancer, and they sent us to the cancer ward the children's cancer ward, to go and have these lumps checked out, which were not cancerous. But then after moving out of that house and getting clean and doing mold avoidance and everything, my daughter's asthma completely disappeared, and the lumps on my other daughter's neck completely disappeared. The person who suffered the most was me. My husband apparently didn't suffer, but I think on a sort of maybe a mental, emotional type level, because he just didn't feel right. He didn't feel himself. And then we actually went away for a week to Fiji because we decided we wanted to go to a pristine environment where we could try and move as many of these toxins as possible. And there he realized that he had been so affected by mold, and we were sweating profusely, and smelt terrible. And I had a massive healing crisis. We were on a tiny little island that had, you know, enough space for 15 huts, but there happened to be an island nurse there. And, you know, I ended up with the island nurse because I was having such bad reactions from this detox, from being in such a pristine environment. So we've worked very hard to try and move as much of these toxins, and it did affect us on a mental and emotional level. You know, it did make us angry and snappy and all of those things. That was all toxins. And the other thing that helped me, in addition to the mold avoidance, were colonics. Colonics was also a huge step for me. But, and then for 10 years, my mother went from doctor to doctor. And again, for 10 years, they told her there was nothing wrong with her. And she spent 20 years in bed, and she passed away a year and a half ago. So I know that if people don't do this, if they continue listening to what they're being told, I know what can happen. And it's not worth it. It is not worth it. So, yeah.
What would you say to the doctors out there who are pushing supplements and not mold avoidance, even though they may know that mold avoidance would give their clients a better result?
Well, it's pure evil, basically, to know that something will help someone and yet to deny them that information when you know it. You're literally killing them. They're literally pulling the trigger. You know, how you can do that to another human being is beyond me. Yeah.
Thank you for that. I think you just wanted to hear it from someone else, because, I mean, we know that, but it's just as bad out here in the U.S. And we have mold doctors. I don't know if you guys have those mold doctors, but
yes,
they're the same crap, you know, but you trust them. Like Keely, Eric, and I have talked about this. You trust them because they validated your illness. So you think they're going to thing for you, but all they want to do is push $500 worth of supplements. They'll tell you to get out of the mold, but it's a lot more than just getting out of the mold, as you described earlier. Mm-hmm. And they miss that key piece of information, and the client keeps declining despite being on all these medications. And we see it time again. And we see it becoming so financially devastating to families. That's another aspect. Mold doctors see money, but it's like you're devastating an entire family.
Yeah.
Like,
we lost our house, we lost our business, we lost everything that we owned. We lost years of my children's lives that I'm never going to get back. You know, lost my mother. And I'm sure that there were doctors who knew this and didn't help my mother. And potentially she could have been here if they had told the truth.
I'm so sorry about your mom. Yeah. It's just a horrible situation to see family members suffer. And, I went into the health field because my family, they all had a ton of health issues. And I'm like, well, nutrition is going to save their health and their life. You know, that was my thinking.
Yeah.
Naively back in the day. And I look back and I'm like, man, I feel like a lot of my family members suffered and died because they were just hypersensitive and having a mold problem, because I was having a mold problem where they were, you know, where they died essentially. And it just killed you, because you just wish you would have known what you know now back then, so you could have saved their lives.
Well, it's quite ironic, because my mother's mother, my grandmother, she spent 10 years bedbound. And I grew up sitting on the floor. And no one knew what was wrong with her. And I grew up as a young child, sitting on her floor, playing with things, knowing my grandmother was in bed, and no one had any answers. And my grandfather was a very well-respected doctor, and he even had no answers on his wife's illness. And then, of course, history repeats itself, and my mother spends 20 years in bed, and then history repeats again, and I'm in bed. So I'm the third generation.
Well, I think in the positive way to look at this, it's like now you know this information, and you know to help your children if they ever find themselves in this situation. You know exactly what to do. You know, you don't have to deal with these crazy doctors with no information to psychologize you for everything.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like it's this blessing and a curse that we're dealt with. So yeah. Are you still having reactions now? Like, can you still, like, if you walk into a moldy building, can you sense it?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. I'm highly, highly sensitive. So I still follow mold avoidance, even though I'm recovered, because I know that I have the potential to slip back. It's not like I can say, well, my work is done and that's it. This is something I'm going to have to follow for the rest of my life and do it 100%. Occasionally I'll touch something. I still have MCAS reactions. So I still take ketotifen and antihistamines when I need them. But certainly I was limited to about 4 foods for a number of years. That's all I can eat. Now I can eat anything, which is amazing. You know, the first time I actually sat down and had, like, you know, a bowl of Indian or something, it was a miracle, because I'd gone from just eating, you know, carrot and cucumber for 12 months, you know. But certainly I carry antihistamines with me wherever I go. If I touch something, if I go into a space, straight away I know if it's moldy, and then I leave, or I use my skills on a daily basis. And that is what keeps me well, basically.
So is the whole family then trained? Like, they know exactly what to do? Like, you have a signal, like, we're in a moldy spot, you gotta go home, drop the clothes, you know, do they?
I'm the signal. So I guess it's a blessing and a curse. But look, we moved out of the city 2 years ago. We went to go live in a beautiful area with lots of trees and far away from EMF and far away from the city and all of that stuff, because I knew that being in an environment like this would be better for my health, and it has been. It's taken me from like 40% well to like 70% well, you know. Definitely location. And when I go back into the city, I struggle. And when I'm out here, I feel so much better. So, you know, to get well in the city, there's only so much you can do. I truly believe that you need to move to an area where your body can actually heal.
Yeah, it's harder to navigate in a city for sure. You know, every city has their good zones, but if you're surrounded by all these bad zones and your little good zone, it's,
yes,
makes it a little tough to navigate. So,
yeah. So we live literally next to a forest, and we can literally walk in and go for walks, and we've got echidnas on our doorstep, and, you know, we've got kookaburras sitting outside our windows, and it has been, yeah, I've seen my health improve massively from coming here.
Well, that's amazing. This is such a great story, and I appreciate you being so vulnerable and so honest with us and our audience. And I'm sure this story is going to spark a lot of more interest in mold avoidance, because I feel like a lot of people are still sort of in this mindset that I need a pill and I need a detox regimen, and that's what's going to save me. And, you know, they're forever having bad health because they're not doing the right things. And so hopefully this will get people out of the mentality that, you know, there's other ways to heal that are better for the body, that you don't need to necessarily take a whole pharmacy of drugs in order to overcome it.
No, look, if you can just move these toxins out of your body and stop it, it's like a bathtub, you know, you keep filling it and you've got the plug open. It's going to overflow eventually. So it is hard work. Like, I won't lie, what I've done is probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. It is extremely hard work, but it's like a muscle. You have to keep building that muscle, and you've got to do it every day. And I know it's difficult when you've got people around you who are not supporting you, and you don't potentially have the resources. I wish we just had a big piece of land, like Eric says, with some tents where people could be dropped off and just hose everyone down and put them in there and just get them out of these areas. But the longer you stay in there, the more it is literally killing you. These toxins are poisons that are actually literally killing you. And to get up and walk away and get out of there, you know, if you were in a a place with a burning fire or, you know, gas or whatever it is, you would get up and you would move. It is survival. It's like a frog in some warm water, you know, and so I urge you to get up and get out of there. This thing is going to kill you and survive, you know. And I don't say that lightly because I know how very, very difficult it is to do that.
It is very difficult. Probably one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life and I probably will ever do, but it's worth having the quality of life that you regain in the end. I would rather do all this crazy stuff or whatever. It's not crazy. It's for our health, but I would do these things if it meant recovering my health, having somewhat normal of a life or normal life and moving forward, because I don't envision myself being bedridden. And I know every other person on this planet doesn't envision themselves being bedridden and sick and unable to enjoy life. You have one life.
Yeah.
And you have to fight for it. And Nicole, you fought really hard for it. You took the right advice from the right person. And I'm glad you're here today with us because you look beautiful. You look vibrant. I'm sure your family is just so grateful that they did everything that they've done, everything that they continue to do because they have you there with them.
Yes. And I'd like to say a huge thank you to Eric for actually responding to my email when I was lying there in the dark and I sent him a message and, you know, just for actually putting the information out. And although he gets so much, you know, trouble from all different areas, he still stands, he still continues on trying to help people, even when they don't want to be helped or don't know that they need to be helped, he still continues on every day. So, you know, if I hadn't had the information from Eric, you know, I don't know if I'd be here really.
Well, thank you so much for that. It really, really makes it all worth it.
Eric, I think, Eric, sometimes we can get lost in the madness of fighting through this, but it's like Eric has done so much and he's saved so many lives that he doesn't even know like how valuable he is to us and to the world and to the community because he's given us a second chance to live. And it's so important. And I mean, I think I would have killed myself if I didn't have Eric and I didn't find him. And he's really given me a second chance at life. So I'm going to fight with him. And I don't know how he does it. He's been doing it for 35 years, you know? Healy says he has empowered us with the truth about our health. And he's done it for free and he's done it selflessly. And, you know, that's what we do every day. And we're here helping him. And we hope to continue building this. This is more than just an organization. This is a movement. This is a movement of having the information to give to others so that way they can empower themselves and know it's not the end. There are other options and there are other answers. It's just being hidden from you. So thanks again so much, Nicole, for coming on. Did you guys have any other questions for Nicole?
No, this was really the perfect interview. I mean, it was just fantastic.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, guys, for having me. It's been a pleasure talking to you all. And the work you guys are doing is amazing. The mold makes you suicidal. And it's just a moment in time. It's just a moment in time. And there's so much more on the other side. So I just want everyone to heal. Just want everyone to get better. Yeah.
Absolutely. We want the same. And that's why we're here and we're continuing on despite all the backlash or whatever we're fighting against. We're going to keep fighting because it's definitely worth it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, my dear. We want to thank you for listening. Just sending a friendly reminder that what we say is not intended as medical advice, but information to expand your thinking surrounding common situations and issues within the mold community. If you like what we do, please support us by making a donation in the link in our show notes. We also provide one-on-one consultations, products to help with symptom management that you can find in our shop, and a private membership group filled with a supportive community of peers working together to heal from toxic mold. As a friendly reminder, Exposing Mold is a 501c3 nonprofit and every donation is tax deductible. Thank you so much for your support, and we look forward to providing you with the most honest information out there on mold and mold issues. Please visit exposingmold.org for more information.